Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 838. It's the 3rd of August 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dennis Thomas, CEO and project manager, Ryan McDermott of Phoenix Global Mining. PGM is ticker there, and they discuss the progress of their exploration and development activities at their Empire Copper Mine in Idaho. Plus, I also have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Next, had results out today, Wrangell Resources, also results out, and Thomas Cook Group. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about the AA Group, that's AA dot, Indivoir, INDV, and Smart Metering Systems, SMS. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO and project manager, Ryan McDermott of Phoenix Global Mining. That's PGM ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure, Justin.
Pleasure, Justin.
Yeah, I know you're on site there. You're very busy, and I've seen pictures of all the goings on there at Empire Mine. But I know you've also released news out this week, which we're covering a bit. Before we get to the news, as always, Dennis, for people not aware of you, can you explain what you're all about there at Phoenix Global Mining, please?
Yeah, Phoenix Global Mining is reopening the old Empire Mine in Mackay, Idaho. Predominantly copper ore body, copper, gold, silver, zinc. We are presently drilling into the upper portion of the deposit, which is an oxide deposit, and we'll shortly be going into the sulfides, the underlying sulfides.
Excellent. Okay, well, early in the week, you did an update on these drilling results. So take us through them, take us what they mean to you, and so far, you know, are they looking good, or are they exceeding, or are they as expected? What's happening?
Yes, I think the word that I used in the press release was encouraging. The results are encouraging. We have a measured and indicated resource of 2 million metric tons, and we have an inferred resource of just over 5.5 million tons. Now we're looking to move that inferred resource into the measured and indicated, in other words, increasing the confidence that we have in our resource. And it is to that end that we, in fact, have our drilling program going on at the moment. And this is 28 holes, of which 21 are reverse circulation, which is basically taking rock chips. And we also have seven holes, which are diamond drill core holes, of which four will be, in fact, for metallurgical test work that we will shortly be doing.
Okay, and Ryan, you're the guy there on the ground in charge of all the guys. How is the project going?
Oh, it's going great, Justin. The results that we have so far are in line with what we've expected. That's the first five reverse circulation holes. We have analytical data. Those are the ones that we released in the last press release. Very favorable, very consistent with what we would expect in that part of the resource. The remaining 22 holes are on their way, either in the lab or on their way to the lab. So we should be seeing results on a weekly basis through September.
Excellent stuff. And so going forward here, guys, just so people can get in their heads a timeline of what you'll be doing, when do you hope to start some production here, and how much do you hope to be producing?
Well, if everything goes as planned, we're looking at a 2020 start for the open pit. Mm-hmm. And that would last 10 years. 10 years. In the meanwhile, we're also looking at the sulfide resource. That resource, we believe, sits just underneath the oxide, and we will be conducting concurrent exploration on the sulfide.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just following that up, Justin. We're in fact we have the contractor on site today. In fact,
we do,
and he's coming in to look at opening the first of the underground workings. We have underground workings to go into, mm-hmm. and we're looking to reopen some of the portals. Originally, there was something like 11.7 miles of tunnels in the old Empire Mine. Now, how much of that will be open, we're yet to see. But we're optimistic, certainly, with our first couple of levels getting inside.
Yeah, and for someone who's not an expert on drilling results, what's the significance of the oxide and the sulfide there?
Well, it's all one copper deposit. Mm-hmm. The oxide portion sits at the surface,
yeah.
from surface to about 300 feet. Below that, there's just been less weathering, and the rocks have been exposed to less oxygen and less water. So the copper minerals are in a sulfide form. That means they're tied up with sulfur. Mm-hmm. And the processing style is different between the two styles of mineralization. Let's say it that way.
Yeah, the oxides which are near the surface, in fact, are amenable to a very, very simple processing, which we call basically heap leach and then solvent extraction and electrowinning. And we actually produce copper metal, copper cathodes. The sulfides, different kettle of fish. We need to use things like froth flotation. Depends on the nature of the sulfides. But if you like, the oxide is easily reachable ore. Very, very quickly, and we've got a fast lead-in time. As Ryan said earlier, we're targeting 2020 to get into production.
Yeah, and you obviously expected, like you said there, plenty of news flow over the next weeks and months, are you?
Indeed, yes, we are. We have, as I said, we've had 28 holes, well, the program is 28 holes, and we're nearing completion of that as well. There's a turnaround of about 6 weeks, I think.
6 weeks in the laboratory.
In the laboratory. So basically the drilling that we're doing now, we have that we've done, and the holes that are left, we're looking those samples, particularly the reverse circulation holes, to dry out. They need a couple of weeks to dry out, and then we send them to the laboratory. So through August, September, and into October, we look to have a regular news flow.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so if anyone's listening right now, Dennis, and they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, can you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, I think we've got an exciting project. We have a fast moving and, in my opinion, a dynamic story developing, which we believe is now and will generate positive news flow. I think the second thing, the latest drilling results are consistent with what we anticipate. In other words, that we are getting the results that we expect, and in fact even exceeding those results with some of the grades that we're getting at the moment. So that augurs very well, I think, for our ore resources. And finally, the quality of data that we've got is good. We're getting favorable additional data. We're adding to what we know about the ore body, and our primary objective now is to add to our resources tons. And we're in the process of doing this.
Excellent, guys. Well, like you say, you're at a busy time there. There's a lot of activity going on there, and you've got lots of news coming out. So hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Good morning to you. Good morning.
I'm a bit annoyed, actually, right? Because I tell you what happened. I've told you before, me and my couple of mates, we have this experiment. We've done two stocks now. We're looking at big cap stocks because
yes.
I'm largely into smaller cap stocks. But we've got this experiment. It's called 1,000 to 100,000 in 50 trades or less. You basically get 10% each time, hopefully roll that over in the next trade. And we've done EasyJet and Sky, and our third choice was Next, all right? So we put a limit order in at $39.99, but it got away from us. The price started taking off, And then we decided to change our tack and went for BT. In the meantime, one of the guys had forgotten to cancel his limit order. So next dipped down, filled his limit order. And today they've had news out. And basically, he's done his 10%, but he's not. It's not in the group, which is annoying, which was our third pick. But we should just left our limited orders there and be a bit more patient. Would have paid off, I think. But what do you reckon?
As the old saying goes, it's better to be lucky than smart. But look, Nick's numbers were really interesting today because, you know, the whole year, or frankly, the last 24 months, Next has been sliding down. The shares used to be 80 plus quid. Mm. And as you intimated, they were well below £40 just a few weeks ago. And, you know, it's been off the back of a terrible, you know, undecisive UK consumer, people's changing tastes. Next boxed it up a little bit as well in terms of fashion and matters like that. But bottom line is, Next remains, and has always remained to me, a middle-of-the-road brand. I've been liking the shares. We've talked about them a few times when they have been around this £40, sub-£40 level. And there's a little bit of payback this morning. The shares are up 10% plus on what normally would be a totally unattractive update, because essentially what they've said is full price sales are now going to be somewhere between -3% and only up 0.5%. And if you take a look at things like profitability, it's going to be less than last year. However, the reality is we come from such low expectations that this is good news. They've tightened the range, they've slightly upped the midpoint, they're actually doing a little bit better than what people thought. And they believe there's a bit more to come. So bottom line is, Next shares rationally up 10% odd today. And I think looking through the numbers and looking through the momentum, there's probably a bit more to come.
Yeah, do you know what I find it really odd? Like you mentioned last time that they mentioned that they are still investing in stores. But if you look at the first quarter, retail was down 8.1%, and this the second quarter down 7.4%, so not as bad this quarter, but still down. And yet the Next directory, it was up 3.3% first quarter and up 11.4% in the second quarter. So you'd think, you know, sensible thing to do. I don't know what kind of, you know, how much the business is in the Next directory, what percentage. But you'd think the sensible thing to do there would be to scale back a little bit the shops, wouldn't you, and go online, you know?
Yeah, it would be. I mean, this has been obviously the beguiling trend of the last two decades. And the beauty of Next, the reason why the shares were rampant and did hit that 80 quid level a year plus ago, was because they were so early into the whole directory and online business side. You know, directory obviously used to be this massive, great big catalog shopping, and then it morphed into something that you would do much more predominantly online. They were well ahead of the game there, well ahead of the Inditexes and the H&Ms and everybody else. So those competitors have been catching up a bit, but those trends clearly remain very beguiling, very, very clear. And bottom line is that will continue to be the case, the sort of the relative sales momentum. But what Next are saying is that you need a high store presence, because people, with things like clothing, they come in, they try it on, they look at the fashions. These are obviously people, not myself, but clearly the average Next shopper. And they use the stores as kind of their way to get comfortable with something before maybe buying it ultimately online. So they think it's a very important part of the overall structure. I would agree, though, that it's not going to be an area where you're going to see decisive like-for-like sales growth anytime soon. That's just the structural way that it is. But that's how they're seeing it. That and, of course, the fact that they've been expanding in things like home and other complementary areas. They think that the sort of the classic Next shopper is not just interested in clothes. They can hawk them some home and other complementary products as well. And, you know, that's still quite tentative, but, you know, you can see some logic in that. You know, multi-use retailing, when done well, can be fantastic. You know, those add-on sales, you know, that's let's face it, in another time and another place, it's what's made Tesco's and some of the other supermarkets. And you look at a store like B&M at the moment, who've got a bit of sales momentum, that's what they've been doing successfully as well.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think for Next, look, there's something for income buyers. They even said that they made a bit more cash surplus than they thought, and they'll probably divvy that back, or special divvy that back in due course. So there's something for income buyers. You get a 4 and change dividend. You get a bit more on the share buyback as well. Fundamentally, I think it's still an inexpensive share, albeit, as we've talked about, up 10% on today. I think, frankly, this should be trading somewhere in the £50 plus level. I would still be holding this one. I do hold this one, and I'd still be buying it at the margin once it's calmed down from today's excitements.
Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, what else are you looking at, Chris?
We've got to talk about Randgold. I mean, you and I have talked about Randgold a few times. In my opinion, by far and away, the leading larger cap gold producer in the world. It's listed in the States and in the UK. It's obviously African based as a business, but once again they've delivered, and the shares are up nicely this morning when I last looked, but they've delivered in the sense that you've got that wonderful combination of production growth, which is always good news, sort of cash control or cost control, producing gold at an attractive discount to the prevailing gold price. Grade, which is sort of the amount of gold they get per ton of soil, that's still very good. And they've got optionality in the sense that they've got a development program in countries such as Mali, the DRC and Ivory Coast, which is giving them options going forward to expand their portfolio further. Well-run company. I've met the CEO a number of times. Well-run and impressive company. And I'm not surprised to see it once again sort of going in a very positive direction. And for me, Randgold remains the way you want to play any positive view on gold. Because clearly, if you have some positive momentum in the gold price, typically a well-run gold company will do two or three times as well as the underlying commodity. And my personal view is positive towards gold. I think it's a good hedge against many things, many weird stuff that occurs in the world today. And consequently, I'm well aligned towards Randgold shares. So fingers crossed this appreciation can continue. But yeah, good commentary, saying nice things about production targets and cost control. I'd still be a buyer of the shares here despite their recent run.
Marvellous. And anything else today, Chris?
Well, final one, not reporting today, reported last week, but we had too many things to talk about last week, so I couldn't slip it in, but I'll mention it now because a few people may be wondering what I think about it. And that's Thomas Cook, which I've talked about in a very positive fashion a number of times on your podcast, Justin. Mm-hmm. And the shares have done wonderfully. I talked about my hope that they would get back to a pound. They've done that and a bit more. It's about 112 pence as we speak today. My personal view would be this one is still a good one. There's still momentum there and I still like what they're doing. But I can understand if people take a little bit of profit if they were buying the shares back in the 60s or 70 pence level. But my view is still momentum in this business and still ultimately undervalued. Was impressed by their pricing power and comments about things like summer trading and winter trading. People are now amazingly booking their winter holidays already. So it's one to keep, in my opinion. Still a bit more to go, but, you know, what a winner.
Yeah, do you know what? It has. This literally was trading in a range, but it broke through that range up through. Look at that. It stumbled a little bit on the pound, but two, three trading days of stumbles, and then it just shot back up. Then it kept going.
Yeah, it's a classic because I reckon I wasn't the only person saying, look, you know, a pound is kind of an interesting level. It's a nice round number, and, you know, in investment technical terms, not that I know much about that, but I can understand why people would think it's important. But my view would be actually, now that we've pushed through that level, I think fundamentally there's a little bit more to play for here. I like the tone of the last statement which came out just over a week ago. So my feeling would be if you've got them, you don't need to panic out of them too quick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Marvellous. Chris, good to speak to you, and we'll speak next week. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm very good, Jess. How are you doing?
Not too bad, yes. I'm just looking at the ridiculous amount. This football player, Neymar, how much he's getting paid, it's just ridiculous. And I'm just thinking, you know, the football is, I must just pull my hair out, thinking the money that is swirling around here. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always going to be inequality, I understand that, but the size of the gap widening here now is just absolutely ridiculous. Because I read a while back that, was it Rooney blew $500,000 on gambling? And his missus gone mad. And I think, do you know what?
Michael Owen before him and so many others, you know, they just come into all this money and they don't know how to manage it.
Well, do you know what? I'll tell them how to manage it. There are plenty of children who need operations and need money to go abroad and they can't afford it. And their parents are on these, you know, crowdfunding sites trying to raise money. You know, if you want to do something useful with your money, lads, give it to the parents of these children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I just think there's plenty of good causes out there you can throw your money into rather than into a bookie's pockets or a casino's pockets. You know, there's plenty of good causes. It's just a waste. And this Neymar, I just published something on Twitter saying I looked at Sao Paulo, where he's from, and there's 6% of Brazilian population lives in slums. And they said there's 2 million alone in Sao Paulo, where he's from. And the money they pay him, which is 198 million, the transfer fee, PSG could give that, to the slums, and it would earn about 25% of their wages of every person in that slum. And I think that's just how much that transfer fee is, and it's kicking a ball around. It's nuts. And he's not 200 million pound better off than the best Sunday League player that you can go and watch down your local park.
Exactly.
I mean, if he could fly, and if he could just put the ball in the back of the net without touching it, that'd be magic. That's worth paying 200 million pounds for.
That would be impressive.
It's not. I just think it's ridiculous.
But there is a flip side of that, because we've seen this dreadfully sad case of this little lad Bradley Lowery, who died of this really aggressive form of cancer a few weeks ago, and the whole world were watching this lad, and he was a huge Sunderland fan, and Jermaine Defoe, the striker, got very involved with him, and I think what a lot of good's come out of that, because of the profile of football, there are charity matches being held and huge amounts of money are being raised for those charities, so it can work in a really positive way too. So and I think all of us were affected by, as parents, you're affected by a little lad that is so keen on football. He's such a big character, and yet this dreadful disease overtook him and claimed him. So
I was thinking, due to his involvement with football, he probably wouldn't have been as well known, and he'd probably raised a lot of money for, the thing, which is good. But I just think, I don't think Jermaine Defoe got paid anywhere near that.
No, he did.
Anyway, let's talk about things we know a little more about. Oh, that's debatable. Stocks. Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, three companies today, Jess. Firstly, I want to look at AA Group, of course, the iconic yellow van company that we all know and love. Of course, this week, the company published a pre-close trading statement, and along with it announced that it had sacked its chairman, Bob McKenzie, for gross misconduct. Now, of course, masses of speculation at the time about what the gross conduct could possibly mean, but it turns out that apparently he had a Clarkson-esque moment in a bar and lashed out at a work colleague and punched his lights out, and he was sacked on the spot. He's lost all his share options and everything, which I'm sure when the matter's looked at in detail, it might seem a little over the top. But
I don't know. I disagree. I think a guy who's paid that much, right? You can't afford. I mean, he's part of his paid for his professionalism, and you can't just go lose it and punch someone in a bar. You know, you've got to be a bit more professional than that. And I think he's rightly so. And it sends and let's be honest, he's probably not skint, and it probably sells. It probably sends a good message to others who are the CEO of his company, who are the big cheese, who think they can treat people in a bad way. Hopefully it'll send shockwaves. And I'm glad they sacked him for that. It's just, you can't put your weight around at that. We're all humans. I don't care what you're paid. We're all humans. Treat people with respect. That's
absolutely. Yeah, that's my mantra in life. Treat people the way you'd like to be treated.
Yeah.
And it's a karma thing. And I absolutely agree with you there. But looking at AA Group, what's happened is the shares plummeted on the day. I mean, they fell about 15-20% at one point. They traded. Let's not forget, this company IPO'd in June 2014 at £2.50 a share. It's now trading at £2.10. On the day prior to the announcement, it was trading at £2.45, and it plummeted, dipped briefly below £2, and it's now come back. Now, this is a company that pays a dividend of 4.5%. In terms of membership, it said in the pre-close trading statement that the paid members of the service were slightly up on last year. It had some issues with IT, and the net result was that the issues that it had experienced meant that the full year performance was going to be broadly in line with that of last year. But also saying that the long term outlook and the prospects for the business and the resilience of the model were very confident in. So this is a company with good visibility, great cash flow, and it's been absolutely punished. Added to this, Neil Woodford, well respected fund manager, his company, his fund, owns 12% of AA. So this
but
is
he's
a,
happy.
This is a company. Well, I mean, he's suffered in the press recently, but I think he's quite philosophical about these companies, and his view is, and he said on many occasions, that the value will out in the end. You know, the value will be realised. And I think if you look at companies like this that are big cash generators, resilient business models, great brand names, what they're trying to do is slim the business down, make it more streamlined, improve efficiencies, economies of scale, etc. And right now, where the company is, I think it's been a huge overreaction to, okay, yeah, he shouldn't, McKenzie should not have smacked his employee around the head. That's obviously wrong, and he'll be dealt with for that. But ultimately, I think the sell-off is a big overreaction, and there is a really good opportunity here to pick up a quality company at really all-time lows in terms of share price.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the same thing. I thought, well, first and foremost, is you've got to decipher, like you said there, between... Was the sell-off because Bob smacked someone in the bar, and at the start, people didn't know why? They just said gross misconduct, and people didn't know why he was sacked at the start. So was it just because of that, or was it because of the trading update, the pre-close update that came with it was bad? And I haven't really read through it, but you reckon that the pre-close update wasn't that bad, is that right?
It wasn't that bad.
So there we are.
It runs, let's not forget, I mean, A, it runs its roadside service. It also has its own insurance business, which is a solid business, a solid resilient business in any event. It also owns British School of Motoring, the driving schools, and it's got numerous other businesses. And what it's in the process of doing with its IT infrastructure, it's improving the IT infrastructure, streamlining the whole process, cutting down costs. But at the same time, its membership is still growing. So okay, the financial performance is going to be in line with last year. Now, the share price was a lot higher last year. So to my mind, this is a quality company. Neil Woodford owns a big chunk of it. I would imagine he'll be picking up shares while they're at this level, and it pays a 4.5% dividend. So, you know, what's not to like?
Yeah. I don't, do you know what Neil Woodford does? He's not that good. Is that true? The thing is, he's done well, but recently, is he still big into tobacco and stuff and all that? Because they've had a hammering, haven't they, because of Nick Dean?
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, for a while, and also he's into, you know, AstraZeneca and all that, and that's taken a hammering.
Last week, and yeah, exactly. I mean, that took a hammering as well. But that's come out really strongly. I mean, it's currently back over £45. It sort of fell to 42, I think. So I still reiterate what I said last week. I think, you know, that's a great company too. Again, a great dividend payer. And you know, if you're going to build a portfolio of good stocks, opportunities like this are fairly few and far between. But where you get an event like this, ignore what's actually happening. Look at the company. Is it a quality company? Has it been really badly affected by it? Has it got massive reputational damage? Okay, the chairman slapped someone around the face. Okay, there's some publicity on the back of that moment, but longer term, is it going to matter? Not really. And that's the view I'm taking. I have actually sort of bought some stock in the company myself, and if it carries on dipping down to close to £2, I will carry on adding to that position.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Anything else, Al? I'm looking at the AA as well. And that's the way to play it, see. I think when you get these black swan events that happen, you know, that pay a good dividend, that, and for some reason, you know, it isn't, I mean, or either, you know, like I said, with Next, which I was saying earlier on, that we're about to go to Next, me and the two mates on the weekend podcast, and we had a limit order at $39.99, like the price of, you know, stuff in shops there, $39.99. And it started to go off, and it didn't go down to that level, didn't get filled. And then, so me and Steve, mate, cancelled the limit orders. Pete forgot to. It got filled, and today they went up by 11%. So, like when you get a company that's had a problem, but they're recognising the problem and doing their best to turn it around and sort it out, it's you know, it's worth looking at, I think, you know. And I'm just looking at Neil Woodford there while I'm chatting. He owns on his website apparently 1.33%. So yep. There we are. You've got a lot of fund. You've got 54 companies he holds in that income fund. That's a lot.
I know. Yeah, it is a lot.
AstraZeneca is his biggest holding, 7.55% of the fund.
Yeah, that's right. It is, but I think he may clearly his involvement doesn't mean it's not the golden passport as such, but it's in line with the strategy of investing into quality companies that are big cash generators and are growing and also improving their cost base too, and that's what AA are in the process of doing. And but again, good visibility, a great business model, highly cash generative, and memberships are growing. So you know, those are the underlying fundamentals I think investors should be looking at.
Marvelous. Anything else, Al? What are you looking at?
Yeah, two more stocks. Dr. David Paul of VectorVest, my colleague there, he published an article on a drugs company called Indivia, that's INDV, mm-hmm. Early this week. Now, Indivia's had a fairly challenging sort of period, you could say. The stock's been as high as £3.96, which is more or less currently where it is now, and as low as £2.66 in the year. What Indivia does, it produces and promotes a drug called Suboxone and a number of other drugs, but in essence it deals with what's called opioid dependence, which is where drug addicts become dependent on drugs and then they wean off the drugs, and it's basically helps that process. The company was paying a dividend up to last year, and it announced about a week ago its half-year results, which said that net revenues had grown by 4%, operating profits are up 23%, and the company raised its guidance for the full year based on strong conditions in the USA where most of its sales take place, and also the resilience of Suboxone sales, which is obviously its flagship drug. It also upped its guidance for the year. Full year revenues expected to be sort of $1.1 billion as opposed to $1.05 billion. So the outlook for the company is very strong. Most importantly and significantly, the company was undergoing some litigation during the previous year, which it dealt with, and Sean Thaxter, the CEO, said in the announcement that it's conclusively resolved outstanding litigation in the best interest of shareholders, and that step has resolved a lot of the legal risks in the business. VectorVest themselves had flagged this company up some time ago on their metrics, and the company currently has a value of just over £5 for the stock. Other brokers also supportive, all with buy ratings. Numis buy £4.90 target. Jefferies buy £4.90 target. Stifel buy £5 price target. So they're all in the same region. VectorVest had this both as a fundamental and technical target based on the way the metrics in their system work. And this is obviously a pretty strong endorsement in my book of the growth prospects for the company. Added to that, Jefferies, they have a target of £4.90. Sean Thaxter, the CEO, presented at the Jefferies Healthcare Conference earlier on this year, and that went down very well. So this is a company that to watch, not currently paying a dividend, but I would expect it would return to a dividend probably next year after the year of the dealing with the litigation has been put to bed, which the CEO says it now has. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Indivia.
Marvellous stuff. Indivia. And it's INDV. That's it. Cool.
INDV, that's it. Yeah.
And your last stock, Al?
Well, the last stock is one we've spoken about on several occasions. And again, we're talking about cash-generative stocks, companies that generate cash hand over fist. Smart Metering Systems, SMS. We've probably spoken about this on three or four occasions over the past couple of years. And again, this is an evergreen cash generator. And I was reminded to look at this because I had a note through saying that the people that supply our energy are going to come along and fit smart metering systems to our gas and electricity. So rather than me have to sort of go and take a reading and put it on and send the readings through online, it's now going to send it directly back, and it does that via the mobile phone masts, and basically they just bill on what we pay, and we can just leave it alone, which is obviously great. Smart metering systems, as I've just described, they provide meters for gas, electricity, energy management, and they also provide data services and undertake major projects for energy suppliers. The company, if you look back at the trading statements, look back at the results, it's just growth in revenue, growth in assets under management, growth in income, growth in profits. The full year results earlier on this year, revenue's up 25%. Pre-tax up 23%, EBITDA up 17%, dividend was increased by 24%, the company is now worth just over $500,000, $549 million. It's traded as high as £6.36, the share price, at as low as £4.35, and it is it's currently trading at £6.17p. Quite near its full year high, but we are now in the run up to the interim results in September. And if we look back at what brokers have been saying about this stock earlier in the year, Peel Hunt retained their buy target and buy and price target of £7.40. Macquarie have increased their price target. They are they have now perform rating and now a buy rating up from £8.90 to £10.68 in price target. Panmure Gordon also increased their position, buy rating £6.50 up to £8.68 price target. So this is just a company that's just growing and growing and growing. It's a great cash generator, and clearly, you know, with all these meters out there, it's just the cash is pouring into the coffers, and really it's hard to see how this can stop. And if they're expanding their operations globally, which they are, then more of the same.
Marvellous, smart, and it's all going that way, isn't it? Do we all have to have one of these smart meters by a certain time? I don't know. I read that somewhere.
I dare say that. Yeah, I mean, in terms of operating efficiencies, that's got to be the way, because with our energy arrangement, I have to go and take the meter readings and then submit them online, and of course you think, oh yes, that. I must do that.
I hate that when there's an email through saying it's time for your reading. I just think, this is Dark Ages stuff. Come on. Get up with it. There should be a lot easier way of doing this than that, you know?
Meters will go, and one of the questions they asked me was, have you got a good mobile phone signal in your area? Well, yes, we have. So that's it. That's how it works. And it's just transmitted directly back to the head office, and that's it. So, that's very efficient. And then we're billed on what we use, which is the way it should be.
Marvellous. Thanks for that. I'll speak next week, fella.
Speak next week, Jess. Thanks a lot.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed stocks on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, New Entry. I don't know if this has been there before, or maybe once. Kennedy Ventures, that's KENV. At four, I had George on the podcast yesterday, executive chairman. Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA. At three, Sunrise Resources, SRES, one of the big risers today. At two, UK Oil and Gas. It's there again. UKOG. Just tipped, though. I mean, they're fighting out tooth and nail here, these two. The top spot in the last few days. It's Ascent Resources. AST. And hopefully we'll be getting Colin on soon, hopefully. Because he's a regular. He's not been on for a while. So hopefully we'll get an update. Who knows? Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Amerisa Resources, that's AMER, and that was an operational update there, the RNS there. At four, Echo Energy, late last night or yesterday afternoon, exercise of warrants. At three, Sunrise Resources, this is why it's most followed today, CS Project drilling update. At two, Sound Energy, SOU, Eastern Morocco license award. And number one most liked RNS was from Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR Holdings in Company. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciates.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.